Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today I'm joined by filmmaker Nick Budabin, whose upcoming documentary, Chi-Town, centers on the first ever annual Chicago United Hoops Classic, is that correct? All-star game between students from the west and south sides of the Windy City.
That is exactly correct.
It's such a long name, but I wanted to get it exactly right. And this project you've worked on, it's already raised over $75,000 on Kickstarter, and a percentage of the profits from this film will go towards the Norm Van Leer Scholarship Fund, as well as the Nonviolence Legacy Fund, an organization dedicated to funding the education and safety of at-risk Chicago kids. So, I mean, this sounds like a really awesome project that you've got involved in.
Yeah, it is a great project, and it's something that I kind of stumbled upon. I'm from New York, but I was living in Chicago in 2011 for work, working on, as you all know, in Chicago, there's no more Oprah Winfrey show.
So I was
working on a show documenting the last season of the Oprah Winfrey show for OWN. And I knew that I wasn't seeing enough of Chicago, and I wanted to see a little bit more, and I'm a huge high school basketball fan, so I started asking around, and I found out about this high school basketball all-star game that was being played for the very first time, and immediately was fascinated. I already had a great DP who was here with me working on the show, and he wanted to shoot the film, so we just started shooting. And we made, we shot an awesome film, and now we're editing it, so it's coming along great.
Now, so you have a background in producing. As I was looking up, I saw Nick Budabin on IMDb. I want to make sure that was you, because it seems like you've worked on Cake Boss and Oprah and a few other things like that. And so was producing sort of like your first entry into the business? Was that something that you wanted to start with?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the reality world, the producer title is really the director title in the film world. So they're sort of crossover. So I've been, I guess you could say, directing reality or producing reality, same kind of thing, for over 10 years, done shows like Growing Up Gotti and Cake Boss and Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D-List, and a lot of True Lives for MTV and that sort of thing. And it's been great, but the reason I got involved in the business was because I have a love for documentaries and reality's just been obviously big for a long time now. But this is my first feature documentary film, and it really combines my love for documentaries with my love for high school basketball. And so it's just really a perfect fit.
That sounds so cool because Chicago has a whole long history of like great documentaries. And when I was looking at the source material here, I was reminded of the Steve James films, Hoop Dreams and The Interrupters, which kind of, so you're kind of like straddling both worlds in this film in a way where it's like you're kind of looking at some of the more troubled neighborhoods in the city and you're seeing how basketball can sort of, be one of those, things that, a community can latch on to sort of like get the kids out of, a violent situation, something like that. And so was there any documentarians over time that you've looked to as far as like for inspiration or something that you kind of had in the back of your mind while you were working on this?
Certainly Steve James is someone who I'm a huge fan of, and I've seen Hoop Dreams a million times and other basketball films like More Than a Game, the LeBron documentary. And there's a whole bunch of basketball documentaries that I love. But I think the film is really unique because it's an all-star game, which means that, a lot of these high school basketball documentaries, they focus on one team or they focus on two teams. Like Hoop Dreams focuses on two kids at two different schools, Marshall and St. Joseph's. But because this was an all-star game, which pitted the top high school seniors from the south side against the top high school seniors from the west side, we were talking to kids from really almost 30 schools all around Chicago, plus the coaches. So on the west side, you had Coach Wolf Nelson from Farragut High School, and you had Coach Tim Anderson from Crane High School. And on the south side, you had Rob Smith from Simeon and Coach Don Houston from Hillcrest. Now, Rob Smith obviously coached Derrick Rose, and they've won. Simeon has won state championship the last few years. But then you had the kids, and you had kids from all different high schools. So what happened was, instead of focusing on just this one season of basketball, our film really started after the basketball season had ended. So you have these seniors who are preparing for their last final all-star game and really their last high school game before they go off to college. Mm. And then you have we were really filming all around Chicago. So that's sort of where the name Chi-Town came, because eventually we realized, this was about the whole city altogether.
That's so cool. And is it always a challenge when you're at the beginning of this to see like where that subject is going to come from as far as like who you're going to focus on the most in the footage? And that all just kind of like happens organically during the shoot, right? Where you just
it does.
Like,
and it's especially difficult, you know, part of the reason that makes it great because there's so many different kids makes it challenging because, you know, you can't follow 30 kids, you know, for a film. So we eventually chose one kid from each side of town, mm-hmm. one kid from the south side, one kid from the west side. And then we also filmed with a coach. The coaches on both sides of town. But we had two other characters who really stand out in the film. One is a scout by the name of Dan Poneman. And Dan Poneman started scouting in Chicago. He's from Evanston. He started when he was 14 years old. He's now 21, but when we were filming him, he was 19. And he helped choose the players for the All-Star game. Oh. And Dan's a real character, and he's also, you know, a really beloved character in the basketball world in Chicago. But he's, you know, a 5'10 white Jewish kid from Evanston who can walk into any gym on the south or west side and really hug everybody in the gym and really be well-respected because he's a big part of the community. So Dan was someone who we followed, and he's very connected to the game. And then the game also benefited, there was a nonviolence aspect to the game. And so it benefited a group called Purpose Over Pain. Mm. And Purpose Over Pain is a group made up of parents who've all lost kids to gun violence here in Chicago. So it's a group, you know, brought together by really unfortunate circumstances. But what they're doing in the community is they're having open gyms for kids to come in and play. And they're reaching out to parents who've lost children and helping them, you know, console them and let them know that there's support groups out there. And so we chose to film with a member of that group, a guy named Tom Bosley, who lost his son, Terrell, when a stray bullet hit him as he was leaving church. Mm. So, you know, stories like that that we hear in the film that remind you that, you know, while this is about a basketball game, the environment that they're growing up in is a really challenging place to grow up.
I saw footage of the Purpose Over Pain group in one of the trailers of this film, and did that inspire sort of more exploration into this nonviolence aspect of the game and sort of how it's being used by these communities, or did they sort of like help you further understand just like the essence of, you know, the importance of basketball in these communities?
I mean, I think what inspired it was that almost everybody we talked to had lost someone to gun violence. Mm. It was amazing how many people in these communities have lost somebody. And it's not because they're involved in drugs or because they're involved in gangs. I mean, again, Tom's son was leaving church after playing, you know, drum practice, band practice, was walking out with his drums in a parking lot in a church and was hit by a bullet. And you hear stories like that all the time. So there's all these stories of tragic violence from the characters that we film with. But at the same time, what's happening around the people who are involved in basketball is that they're very positive. They're going to college. They're coming back to the communities, and they're working as coaches or referees or teachers, and they're involved in the community in a really positive way. So the film is a positive one. It's not about it is about shedding light on the problem, but it's showing that there's a solution to the problem. And what we saw was that solution is, whether it's sports or some kind of extracurricular activity, it's keeping the kids off the streets, putting them in gyms or churches or Y's or places where they can feel safe, and keeping those programs open, and really having more people, adult males and females who want to volunteer their time, which we saw a lot of, but you need more in these communities to come and help the kids. So we were just inspired by seeing how much good was coming out of these neighborhoods that really get so much press for how much bad is coming out of the neighborhoods.
Yes, and that's so important, you know, to have that, you know, message out there as well. And with, I mean, Chicago just has been such an iconic city for the sport of basketball. And just growing up with me, I mean, you know, I'm not exactly like a massive sports fan, but there wasn't a single game that I missed, you know, during those six, you know, championship years with Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And you list in even just the press notes, just people like Derrick Rose, Anthony Davis, Jabari Parker, people like that, who are just like right now very, you know, currently these major figures in basketball. And what do you think it is about Chicago that produces these people? Why do you think Chicago is a particular hub for, you know, basketball?
I think there's a real toughness here that the players grow up obviously in these neighborhoods, and there's a lot of competition, and this rivalry is a big part of it, because you have these schools on the west side and you have these schools on the south side, and certainly there's rivalries within the west side and the south side. So Crane and Marshall are both west side schools, and that's a big rivalry. But when a west side school goes up against a south side school, they really want to win. And it's not just the high school games. We filmed at a Sunday pickup game where for the last 30 years, these guys have been getting together. Every Sunday they play to 150. Guys from the west side come and guys from the south side come. They're all buddies. They all hang out before and after. But they play hard as hell during that game. So there's the rivalry breeds this competitiveness and this competitive nature among the players. Chicago's just got a lot of hard-nosed players, and not to mention the fact that you can't go five blocks without a high school and a gym or a court. There's just so many places to play. So there's a lot. And you mentioned Derrick Rose. One of the things that was interesting when we were filming was that, you know, it was 2011. It was Derrick Rose's MVP season. So while we were filming, you know, Derrick Rose is only a few years out from Simeon. Simeon's coach, Rob Smith, who coached Derrick Rose, was one of the coaches in the game. And so you really got to see this parallel thing happening where you're seeing Derrick Rose's coach in this game and seeing those kids, you know, looking to graduate high school while this kid, Derrick Rose, just a few years out of high school on the south side, is moving on to become the youngest MVP in the history of the NBA. So there's a lot happening in Chicago all at once in the basketball world.
Absolutely. And it's just it's thrilling to see these kids just kind of seemingly rise out of nowhere and just have these like exceptional basketball skills. And was there anything just in the footage of the training of these kids that you could see was just like you could see how the coaches themselves were forming these great players, or any certain pointers they were giving the kids that were you know making them so successful at the sport?
Well, one of the coaches that we filmed with became really a standout character is a guy named Tim Anderson, who was one of the coaches on the west side. And Tim went to Crane High School. Then he went off to college and came back to coach at Crane High School. And when we were filming, he was only 27 years old and had already won Coach of the Year twice. At 27 years old, he's really able to form a bond with these players because he's not that much older than them. And he knew them when they were growing up in the same neighborhoods. You know, he's from the Henry Horner housing projects in Chicago, which is one of the roughest projects in Chicago. It's not around anymore. But to see these young coaches who've really just, you know, left the neighborhood and then come right back to give back. I mean, the kids now see this positive male role model who has done something positive and come back and now really is holding them accountable to do the same thing. So what you see is men who come back and the kids have somebody to look up to. So certainly there's training. Certainly they work hard. But I think the biggest thing that breeds success is these kids seeing other successful guys who've made it come back and then push them to do the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And just from your own perspective as, you know, producer, now documentarian, what is the challenge of earning the trust of the subject so they don't feel self-conscious on camera, where you really are kind of almost like a fly on the wall? What sort of techniques do you utilize to sort of get to that point with your subjects? I'm sure it's different depending on the subject.
Well, that's a good question, because it's really for me it was the most fun thing and still is the most fun thing about making the film versus reality. I mean, as everybody knows, reality is not exactly reality. You know, you have to manipulate things. But for this film, it was very important for us that we kept it as a documentary. And what there was a few things we did. I mean, one thing was that we had no money, so we couldn't afford to hire a big crew. So it was myself and my DP and my director of photography, and he would, you know, run audio as well. So there was only two of us. So we would go in, and you know, he's not a talkative guy. He would just come in and start filming once they're mic'd, and I would just let them film. We would just let them do what they had to do for a while. So we would really never come in and start asking questions or do this or do that. Wherever we would show up, he would film and I would watch, and eventually, you know, we would ask a couple questions when it felt appropriate. But one of the techniques that we used was we didn't really do sit-down interviews. We would interview people while they were in the process of, you know, shooting layups or dribbling a basketball or, you know, helping someone rebound or working in a gym or whatever, so that it was just them in their natural environment, and we never made them feel like we were doing anything but having a conversation. And so, you know, I think that plus the fact that they could tell that I was genuinely interested in not only the basketball aspect of their lives and this story, but you know, their communities and how to make it, what they've done to make it positive and what their thoughts are on how that cycle can continue. So I think they trusted that I was going to, you know, do them right with the footage.
Sure, absolutely. And was there any striking, you know, similarities or differences between the West and South side as you were, you know, there? It's, even just in terms of the education and anything that, that struck you in the footage when you were kind of contrasting them? Or were they more similar than you might have expected?
Well, you know, the history of the rivalry sort of tells the story of the two neighborhoods. And, you know, you see it some, you hear about it a lot. I think it was probably more pronounced, you know, 20, 30 years ago than it is now. But the sort of the way the rivalry started was that, you know, African-Americans settled on the South Side first when they got to Chicago. And the first all-black high school was DuSable on the South Side. And eventually they started going west, and then other high schools started forming on the west side, like Marshall, like Crane. So the rivalry started there with basketball, but it also sort of established the way that they acted and the way that they talked, and then eventually the way that they played. So the black people who lived on the South Side had this sort of finesse, more polished part of their game because they had been in Chicago longer and were more established, whereas the West Side players were really rough and gritty because, you know, they were sort of living in more condensed quarters and hadn't had a chance to kind of establish themselves yet. So the rivalry really represented the way that they acted, the way they talked, and then the way that they played basketball, which was fascinating to me to see that there's these two sides of town that you can get to in 10 minutes and they play completely different styles of basketball, and they're proud of those styles of basketball. And they still try to coach that and try to teach that. But then, you know, eventually it crosses over. Like guys like Derrick Rose, he's polished and he knows the fundamentals, but he's obviously a hard-nosed, tough player as well. So he really, he's one of those players you can say has sort of both sides to him.
Oh, absolutely. And this whole, this Chicago United Hoops Classic All-Star Game. This was the first, when was this footage shot? I think you said 2011.
So we started filming in January of 2011, and the game, which was the very first time they were putting on the game, was April 30th, 2011. So we filmed for, you know, 2 to 3 months leading up to the game. And then a little bit afterward, you know, we were there when the kids went off to college, and we've come back a few times just to see how people are doing and that sort of thing. So that's when that game happened. But the game is now an annual thing. So we were fortunate to be there for the first one, which I think made it really special and you know, made everybody really want to get that first win. And I won't tell you who wins because it's
interesting. No, of course not. No, I wouldn't dream of asking
but,
that.
But now it's an annual thing. So they had it again this year. Rahm Emanuel was there for this year's game. And it's going to be an annual thing. And it's really good for the community because it really brings these two sides together and under this idea of basketball and nonviolence.
And so how do you think, just in your own personal, you know, take on this, how does something like basketball really help, you know, decrease the violence, apart from just the obvious? I mean, was there anything you saw in the footage as like an example of someone who could have been, you know, drifting, you know, in the wrong direction, and this kind of really helped? And I mean, I'm sure just...
I mean, everyone, honestly.
Everyone,
I
really,
mean, you know, when you're growing up in an environment where... you know, there are so many people trying to steer you in the wrong direction. To have a coach who holds you accountable and teaches you discipline and wants you there on time. And if you're, you know, make sure that, you know, to play basketball, you have to get good grades. So you have to stay in school and do well. And, you know, you get exposed to things and people that you might not get exposed to otherwise, like traveling for tournaments or, you know, meeting different types of coaches and players at different camps. So, I really believe that kids in these communities just need to see a positive example in their lives and see that there are that's not just take anything away from the other people who are in their communities, but it's to say that when you're around sports and you're around this structure, there's so many good examples that these kids, we went in not knowing what to expect, but I was immediately, the thing that stands out and really is the theme of the film is that there's so many good things happening on the west and south side of Chicago. And if people paid more attention to that, I think hopefully this movie will show them that, and there'll be more support for programs that allow these gyms to stay open later, allow there to be busing or some kind of service that gets the kids to and from the gym, because that's the neighborhood they're growing up in. I mean, in those 5-10 blocks between walking to the gym and going home, something really bad can happen to them. So you really want them to be able to not only have the gyms open later and open earlier, but to have some sort of system for getting them back and forth.
Oh, sure.
But as long as they're there, they're doing good.
So what is the future of this project for you in terms of like how you want to release it? Is this something you might be aiming for theaters or television? And I think you've also said that you might want to show this in schools as well. Like this would be something you'd actually like shown in,
Yeah, we would. I mean, well, so, you know, first off, I mean, we are in a place where we're looking for money. So if anyone's out there and they're interested in learning more about the film on the investor end, whether it's you or you have ideas for people who might be interested in investing, you know, we have all the footage shot, which is and it's amazing. We have a rough cut and it's great. But, you know, we want to put a lot of archival footage in it. We want to get great music. We want to do great graphics to really make this film be as good as we possibly think it can be. But we need some money. So that's our first step, is to get some more money to finish it. We're also looking for archival footage. So we hope the people out there listening who may have filmed at high school games or know people who did can help bring that footage to us. But our goal after that, once we finish the film, is first to enter it into film festivals. We're hoping to premiere at Tribeca Film Festival in New York. They have a great sports documentary program there. And then we want to get distribution. And not only do we want to show it in movies, but like you said, I mean, we're working to get it shown in schools, in WISE, and because we really feel like there's a lesson to be learned from the footage that we shot. And we certainly don't want to charge everybody who has to see it. So we're also really hoping that we can develop some sort of curriculum around the film so that when it's shown in schools, there's a clear lesson plan around it. And we've talked to some people who have seen some of the footage who work in that field and feel strongly that we would be able to create a curriculum around it. So we have a lot of big plans for it.
That's so awesome. And this just being your first, you know, feature documentary, what has this experience been like for you in terms of your own just, you know, view of filmmaking, how that's changed since you've done this? And what do you want to bring from this experience into the next one? And do you hope to do more features after this?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to do more features. I mean, I'm really hoping that this is sort of a launching pad for me to be able to do more documentaries. I mean, there's been a lot of lessons. Documentaries are really tricky because you can't be too focused going in. Otherwise, you're going to miss a lot of things. So as much as I'd like to say on the next one, I'm going to film a lot less so that I can save money and so that I can be, you know, not have the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage that I've ended up with. You gotta be broad. But I think I guess a big lesson that I've learned is that I've learned to save a little bit more money, better than I did on this one. I think the next time I'll be a little bit more careful about how I spend. But just, you know, every time you step away from looking at the footage for a little while and you're able to go back and then look at it with a different perspective, I really think it changes for you in a really positive way. So I think it's really good to be able to have the editing process go over, really let that, don't try to pack it in too tight, because every time I've come back and looked at it, I've gained a whole new perspective, and I think it's been for the better. So that's been a really, really good experience for me.
And would you recommend Kickstarter to other people? Because it seems like you had a lot of success with that, and it seems like there's a key to making, you know, obviously a compelling video with your campaign is always helpful and things like that. And what do you think the key is to having success on that?
I think definitely making your own video. I think that's one big key to Kickstarter is you know, making your own plea. No one can say it better than you why this is an important project for people to get involved in. I think that, you know, Kickstarter is great. It's a lot of work. And it's not for someone, you know, for me and really probably for most people, it's not really fun to ask your friends and family for money. It's not the place you want to, you know. But it's necessary. And I think, you know, You have to be really ready to go out and send emails constantly and do interviews and get the word out there. So it's good. It can give you great results, but it's a lot of work, and I think you need a team of people working on it before you do Kickstarter, because it was more than I was expecting.
Sure, absolutely. Well, for any of our listeners just who are interested in, you know, seeing the film or perhaps investing in the film, what would be the best link for them to look at in terms of just any updates or anything like that?
Sure. I mean, you can go on Kickstarter, and we send out updates, you know, every now and then, and you type in Chi-Town, and you'll find our, I think there's a couple of links that come up, but you'll know ours is the basketball one.
Yeah.
You can email me, nick@chitownthemovie.com. And, you know, let me know if you have any thoughts or any ways that you'd like to get involved. And we do have a website, chitownthemovie.com as well. you'll go up there and you'll see that the page just says ChiTownTheMovie.com. Yeah. But we hope within the next month that we'll have it up and running. So, you know, keep checking back in. And you know, we're going to be really promoting it once we're getting back to Chicago. But, yeah, if you want to contact me, it's Nick@ChiTownTheMovie.com.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, it sounds like a great project, and I wish you the best on that, and I'll keep my eyes peeled for all the updates on that as well. So for anyone listening that wants to keep updated on Chi-Town, it looks like a great film, just go to ChiTownTheMovie.com. And for all my recent reviews and interviews, you can check out HollywoodChicago.com and Indie-Outlook.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.